You're listening to Restoring Order, a dissident right podcast focused on American politics and culture. I'm your host, Patrick Casey. We are live with Vincent James. Vincent, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I heard you say that you couldn't order non-essential stuff off of the internet. Is it not letting you? Are you talking about Amazon or?
Well, I suppose that might be a bit too general of a statement. I'll just say this. Everything that I've tried to order off the internet except for food hasn't worked, right? Musical equipment, right? A guitar, a bunch of different pedals. I tried ordering a new box light. I tried ordering a couch. And every time it's let my order go through, but within 24 to 48 hours, it tells me that they can't, you know, they just refund the money. So I don't know if you guys have had luck.
I've never had that issue so far. Like, I just ordered vacuum bags for my wife so she could vacuum the house. And they came like within like 2 days. I don't know. Is that an essential item?
Did you order that off of Amazon?
I did. Oh, I've been ordering stuff off of Amazon, things that I need here and there.
Okay. You know, I place these orders on other sites. So that might be the issue. It seems like Amazon.
I see. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, it seems like Amazon is actually coming out on top in this. They seem to, I can't recall exactly what the metric was, but I seem to remember reading that their stocks at the end of the first quarter for this year were at like a record high or something. They made record gains. So, you know, as usual, when these kind of crises happen, you have like, it's kind of similar to the financial crisis 2008, you usually have like the bigger players, right? The bigger banks, the bigger corporations that come in and just, and they're the ones with the capital and the infrastructure to outlast, to survive in the midst of the pandemic, of the financial crisis, whatever it is. And, you know, that's all the more reason, as Nick discussed on the show, that's all the more reason to open things back up again. It's not, you know, it's right. the entities that we're not so fond of, that we're pretty apprehensive about, right? Again, the big corporations, the big banks, big financial institutions, these guys are doing fine. And in fact, oftentimes they end up better. They end up stronger and with more money on the end. And it's the little guy, it's the middle class that ends up really feeling the brunt of the economic collapse. So
yeah, 100%. They have a monopoly over the market, so they're not going to suffer. It's going to be the small businesses that suffer. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, anyways, Vince, how have you been recently? You've been putting out content as usual at a very impressive rate.
Yeah, really good. Actually, I haven't been doing it as often. I usually do an extra 3 segments on my second channel, and I haven't been doing that because I'm trying to fix things around the house. So I'm like tied up working till like, and then, you know, it's just a lot of taking a lot of time. So I've been slacking on the second channel, but we'll be back to normal there soon.
Oh, interesting. So it's the opposite of what I thought. I'm just used to a constant barrage of Vince James content, whether it's tweets, articles,
videos, and all of that.
Telegram posts. Yeah. I mean, it's so you even toning it. Yeah. TikTok, right. You even toning it down a few steps is still, you know, a ton compared to a lot of people. No, it's impressive though. And you're doing great work over there. So let's begin. I brought you on to discuss Ahmaud Arbery and the McMichael brother, or I guess they're not brothers, the McMichaels and that whole situation. It's something that everyone has been talking about. And as usual, the mainstream narrative on the subject doesn't really match up with the facts. So I do right off the bat want to get your kind of initial take, and then we'll go from there, go into the details and talk about the broader implications.
Yeah, I said this on another podcast I was on recently. Basically, my biggest problem with this entire story is the coverage of it, right? Because we started out as two racist white rednecks, ex-KKK members, you know, hunting down this innocent black jogger, jogging through the neighborhood, and literally lynched him. This is basically how the narrative started. It's much like with the Covington Catholic kids, where it all started out, where two racist white kids from a Catholic high school during a pro-life march ran up on some Native American Vietnam veteran, and it turned out none of that was true. Now it's turning out that basically none of the original narrative was true. And now the goalposts have moved to, well, you know, he didn't deserve to die because he went into someone's house under construction. And they're even still trying to change transform the rhetoric around the new information coming out. They're calling it a construction site, as if it's like these apartments that are being built in the middle of Manhattan or something like that. And he just wandered on to a rock quarry. Some, you know, they're still trying to sort of transform the rhetoric to sort of blur the lines for people. The truth of the matter is that this was a privately owned home under construction. The homeowner just came out recently, and I posted this clip on Telegram, and said that the neighborhood was effectively on high alert after the neighborhood found out, it was a tight-knit community, found out that this person, that the homeowner, was catching people coming into his house on a constant basis, and his alarm was set off, and his video camera picked up the footage, and there was someone who had some tools stolen and some copper pipe or something like that stolen out of the back of his truck nearby. So the neighborhood was on high alert, according to the homeowner. The neighbor behind him, some other neighbor, Nat McMichael, said that, hey, next time you see him on your video camera, give me a ring. So he saw him, he gave him a ring, and he said, well, you know what, actually, someone just got shot down here, and we think that it was him. So this is what it's changed into. But of course, the media doesn't change their rhetoric around this. Of course, we just saw this bottom lower third on Fox News recently say that, you know, innocent jogger killed right. by McMichael crew. So it, the
far right racist reactionary Fox News is running a headline that puts the headlines, you know, that BuzzFeed and the Huffington Post have probably put out to shame. Right. You know, oftentimes you'll have right-wing individuals, you know, ostensibly right-wing individuals and, you know, institutions, publications that take a more extreme stance on the issue, right? They take even perhaps a more progressive stance at times on some of these issues. We saw it with Matt Walsh calling for lethal injections. I'm sure people on the left have called for that against the McMichaels, but I haven't seen any too many prominent names do that. So yeah, it's this whole It's a recurring theme. It's an ongoing process whereby people on the right attempt to out anti-racist, to out liberal the left, to out liberal liberals. It's obviously a game that we're never going to win at, and it's not one that we should be playing to begin with. But yeah, you're right. We had the clip. The clip came out sometime last week. I forget the exact day. Within hours, or probably even just minutes, you had people weighing in, coming to these, arriving at these absurd conclusions, definite conclusions. Again, Matt Walsh being most, symptomatic of the issue at hand, where people are just waiting. They're not even waiting for all of the facts to come out. You get a 15-second clip, and people right. like Matt Walsh are calling for the execution of these two guys, people without criminal records. One guy was law enforcement. These guys, I don't know what they do in their private life. I imagine they're family men, Christians, conservatives.
Yeah,
and probably. These are the people that are just getting thrown under. Oh, just kill them. Just kill them, right? That's what Matt Walsh in the Daily Wire.
Who knows? They could have even been yeah. Democrats. Who knows? Who knows what they the thing is that there was in the narrative, it was pretty clear that they were pushing racial motivation. And we know with all of these different stories, they always mention race in headlines. Always. When it's a white on black attack or a white on black homicide, they're always going to mention race in the headline. And if they don't mention race in the headline, they'll certainly put up the victim, the picture of the victim, and the picture of the offender up on the thumbnail so that you know it was a white on black attack. We see this every single time with the media. Now, this is what I've said, and there are numbers to prove this, is that the media covers, as far as interracial attacks and interracial homicides go, the media covers 90% of cases less than 10% of the time, meaning white and black and white. And they cover the less than 10% of the cases around 90% of the time, black on white. There was a lot of talk, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a lot of talk since the outbreak of the coronavirus of anti-Asian hatred rising, anti-Asian hate right. attacks rising, things like this. Well, that dropped out of the media very quickly because basically the media realized who these perpetrators were, because a lot of times you had a video accompanying the attack. And almost 100% of the attacks on Asians that have occurred since the outbreak of the coronavirus were black on Asian. And we actually compiled a whole spreadsheet for everyone to go look at the redelephants.com. One of the worst attacks, or the worst attack on an Asian family, was at Sam's Club. And it was by a Hispanic man who committed a mass stabbing against a Hispanic family. And according to police, he sought out Asians. I'm sorry. A Hispanic committed a mass stabbing against an Asian family. He sought out Asians. Right, right. He sought out Asians at the Sam's Club. According to police, he explicitly said this. Imagine if this was a white attacker who committed a mass stabbing against Asians. Additionally, there was another report that we have up on TheRedElephants.com as well of a black teen drop kicking an old Asian lady in the face at a bus stop. And there's a video to accompany this as well, this story. Once again, imagine if it was a white man drop kicking an old Asian lady in the face. I mean, it's just on and on and on and on. Same thing with the anti-Jewish attacks in New York City. 90%+ of the anti-Jewish attacks are perpetrated by black Americans. Once again, they're not giving us the full context, and therefore they are the radicalization machine. They always call us radical. People are being radicalized on YouTube. People are being radicalized on DLive. They're radicalizing the youth. young teens are going to come out of quarantine full-blown Nazis. But it's really the media refusing to, withholding context, withholding information to push a narrative, to push this belief that there's just crazy white racists populating America and attacking people and you can't even go out jogging.
Right. And if you even cast the slightest bit of doubt toward that, you know, toward that narrative, then you're, you know, you're called all of the names in the book, right? So you can't even question it. You're almost expected to accept that narrative unthinkingly and unquestioningly. It's insane because the narrative is not it's not, you know, in line with the facts. Just from a take ideology out of the equation, just look at the objective facts, look at the facts of who's committing these crimes, who's not committing these crimes. And yeah, like you said, I think the 90-10 principle probably applies. Not quite the Pareto principle, but it's close. Yeah, and let's talk about why that is. And I think most people listening to or watching this, probably could take a pretty accurate guess as to why the media and the powers that be aren't interested in the facts, and they're only interested in promoting a particular narrative. But I want to hear from you, Vince. Why do you think this is the case?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I think it's actually a plethora of reasons, not just one particular reason. I think that there's certainly an anti-white basis to this, right? To, you know, sort of grouping up all of the minorities. I saw this Washington Post article recently by Vanessa Williams, not that Vanessa Williams, a different one, for the Washington Post. And basically what it said, the headline was, "What White People Can Learn from Racism from the Coronavirus." Basically implying that, you know, the white people are the ones being racist during the coronavirus outbreak against Asians. It also goes on to talk about all sorts of other things about how blacks are dying at higher rates from coronavirus than any other race. I mean, there's a bunch of reasons for this, none of which are racism. We have that up on theredelephants.com as well, because AOC tried to claim that. But basically what this person did throughout their entire article was group up, use the phrase people of color, and then grouped in Asians, Hispanics, and blacks as the people of color against white people. So this is sort of like warlike language. You have to you listen to how these people speak, and they say white ally. This is war terminology here. So that's one reason.
You have allies, you have enemies, you have the line, the battle lines drawn in the sand. It is very a militant rhetoric coming from
very scary media. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And then on the other hand, then you have the electoral aspect of this, right? Do you remember that Virginia ad for Gillespie or against Gillespie, where it showed this white man driving around in his pickup truck with a Confederate flag and like chasing down minorities.
Chasing down Latinos.
Right. So keeping people scared. Right. And these people just slurp it up, certainly slurp it up, because any reason, any obstacle, even if it's a pseudo obstacle, any obstacle that can be put in their way from doing better for themselves and for their communities, they're going to go ahead and let them construct that obstacle. It's like, and I used this analogy when I was talking about this the other day. I said, like, if you're you tell your son to go out and do some yard work or something like this, this sounds pretty something a boomer would say, but you tell your son to go out and do some yard work. He gives you all of these different reasons why he can't go out and do this yard work. So what you do is you take away all those reasons that he just gave you, all of those obstacles that he has said that are in his way from going out and doing what he needs to do. And then even though you take away all those obstacles, you go back to his room and you say, hey, go do the yard work. He still constructs these obstacles or makes you believe that these obstacles are still in his way. And so this is a large aspect. I don't know if that makes sense. I think I explained it more succinctly on my show the other day, but that's how I sort of see this. There's a couple of factors that go into play here.
Yeah, I agree. There are narratives that they're trying to promote that at the end of the day are promoted because they benefit the ruling class. The powers that be are interested in promoting globalism, and a big part of that means that they want to bring in people from all over the world to be cheap labor, to be, you know, to vote for more globalism, to vote for socialism, to vote for democratic policies. And as a result of that, they feel they have to bash, demonize, and delegitimize the majority of this country, which is white Americans, basically. And part of that is, you know, they are interested in turning these new people who have come here against us, sure. But I think part of it too is turning white people against white people, right? Getting white people to view themselves as less morally valid than other people. Because once you've lost any appreciation for who you are, for your heritage, for your religion, your culture, and so forth, at that point, you don't really care about conserving anything, right? At that point, you might even go along with the left's anti-white, anti-Western, anti-Christian agenda. And I think that we're seeing that play out here when it comes to these, you know, this is just another Trayvon. This is just another Mike Brown, right? This is an example of a black male who has a criminal record to some degree, doing something he shouldn't have done, right? Reaching for someone's gun, attacking someone, getting shot in self-defense, after likely being, you know, casing, if not directly robbing a neighborhood house, and then getting shot in the process, right? It's very easily avoidable. It's easily avoidable. And it's unfortunate that the whole thing happened. Obviously, we'd all be better off if it didn't happen. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the McMichaels didn't do anything wrong, right? It's the narrative that they're promoting about jogging, which, by the way, you know, Jared Holt did a hit piece today, and he on a certain someone, and he mentioned the jogging narrative. They're still going with the jogging narrative. They still think this guy was out there in his Timberlands, you know, miles and miles, miles from his house, you know, wearing khaki shorts. No one does that, right? It's not believable. And Vince, let's talk about the security camera footage. So there has, I've seen a number of clips going around. Most of them appear to be legitimate, appear to be authentic. You know, so there was footage of him visiting the site, the construction site, which again is like a 90% completed house. If you look at a picture of it, you know, it's Matt Walsh again. I want to keep going back to this guy because his takes have just been so bad. This guy deserves to be bullied out of the public space. It's not going to happen. But we need to remember his position on this. He's walked it back somewhat. But the point is his take was that it's a manly thing to do to go out and check out construction sites, right? Oh, manly thing going out there, got the beard, maybe smoking a cigar with the other men. Look at the building. Yeah. And maybe that applies to like a very recent construction site where there's a foundation laid, you've got your 2x4s, and that's it. But if you from all external appearances, this looks like a completed house. So Arbery going in there was not like, wow, look at the construction. Wow, this is a great foundation. They did a really, really great job. No, what he was doing was clearly there to case the place, if not directly rob it. He might have done both because, again, he had visited the place multiple times. Is that correct? Is there footage showing that he had been there more than once?
Well, first of all, what I want to say is that when we use rhetoric like construction site, I mean, I think that we're really letting them win over the narrative war, as they would call it. The way that I see it is that the media was entirely upset that we won the narrative war on the Covington Catholic kids. CNN had to have seen the full live stream for the Covington Catholic story because they mentioned things that were only in the full live stream. They said that the black Hebrew Israelites were just five young black gentlemen preaching about the Bible and oppression nearby, when truthfully they were, you saw what they were saying, right? They were saying a lot of other things than that. And so I think that the media was very upset that we actually won that narrative war. As a matter of fact, there was an opinion piece that was written in the New York Times. There was also an opinion piece that was written in The Guardian about how conservatives, quote unquote, changed the narrative from reality to an alternative reality and won the narrative war on the Covington Catholic kids. So the way that I see it is that they were jumping out ahead this time. They weren't going to lose the narrative war on this. Even if new footage came out and new evidence came out this time, they're not going to lose the narrative on this. So they changed the terminology that you would typically use, which is a house being remodeled, and, you know, private home being remodeled, and they changed that into a construction site. And we're even hearing people who are supposedly on our side of this, you know, using rhetoric like construction site. So that's the way that I see that. As far as the footage goes, you can clearly see him walking through the neighborhood prior to going into this house on the day that the shooting occurred. So he's walking through the neighborhood. He's not even power walking. He's just walking through the neighborhood. He looks into the house, looks into the garage, and then sprints into the house. This is confirmed by videotape. As far as the
footage, been released? I haven't seen him walking through the neighborhood. Yeah. Has that been released?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That the footage from outside. Did you see the footage from outside?
I've obviously seen the original clip. I have also seen the footage of him apparently in there at night, scoping the place out. I haven't seen him walking through the neighborhood. I haven't seen him actually walking into the house. Wow.
Oh, yeah. There's a Ring doorbell camera, or there's a camera outside one of the neighbor's houses across the street that shows him walking. Yeah,
maybe I did see that. I'll have to double check, but go on.
Yeah. So he's walking down the block and then he sprints into the house. they notice him, and then you know what happens. But there is footage of him inside of this house going back all the way to October. Now you have to remember there are neighbors that have said that they have had things stolen. The homeowner never on any of these videos dating back all the way to October was Arbery or the person that they think is Arbery stolen anything from that particular property, but from other properties that he's had that he has remodeled in the past, he's had like copper piping stolen, things like this. Neighbors have had tools stolen, and so this is the reason why he placed the cameras within this house that's being remodeled. So all of this footage shows him in this house going back all the way back to October, the very last day where we have the most recent footage. It shows him walking, sprinting in the house, and then the cameras inside pick him up inside, looking around, and then running out, and then the McMichaels give chase. Now, the thing that this hinges on is, was that pursuit legal? It all hinges on the legality of the pursuit, because some people would say, well, it's only if you see a felony. Some people would say, well, sometimes they do have an argument for chasing someone if they perceive it to be a felony, and even though it's a misdemeanor. Sometimes they even have the legal right to pursue someone if it's a misdemeanor trespassing. And so that's what this hinges on, this entire case. As far as the shooting goes, Arbery, and this is something that the media tried to claim, even though we can see the footage for ourselves as well, the media tried to claim that Arbery did not charge them. I saw this Guardian article come out trying to claim this even still today, but you can clearly see when you slow down the video that Arbery charges McMichaels trying to take a shotgun away, which is aggravated assault. This is felony aggravated assault.
He runs around the car. He's on the right side of the car. He runs up. He runs in front of it to get to. Right. I mean, if I was being chased by people with a gun, it all depends on the context, but my two options would either be run the hell away, not toward them, right? Like the other direction. Or I'd just be, I'd just say, hey, leave me alone, don't shoot me, rather than charging him. I mean, that's the last thing you want to do. That's the last thing you want to do. And again, you get these conservative tough guys on Twitter saying, if you point a gun at me, you're not going to do anything, right? That's not what you're supposed to do when someone points a gun at you. Maybe if you have a gun, you can try shooting the person in self-defense or something. But yeah, it's just a series of bad decisions and avoidable mistakes made by Ahmed Arbery.
Yeah, but the only reason why we're even talking about this is because Ahmed Arbery was shot by two white guys. That's the only reason why we're talking about this. I mean, there was story after story. Like I was telling you before, you have last year, just in interracial attacks alone, 540,000 between blacks and whites. Black Americans committed 500,000 of those. As far as homicide goes, black Americans kill double the amount of whites every single year than whites kill blacks. This equals out to an 11 times higher per 100,000 rate. There are several stories of white joggers being killed by black Americans, and it doesn't get even close to the media coverage, if any. We're never going to see a Hollywood star create a viral hashtag for a crime that is black on white. We're never going to see that. We're never going to see LeBron James come out and speak out against a crime or a homicide that is black on white. They're just absolutely.
And apparently you're not going to see too many conservative pundits doing it either. That's the thing.
Right.
Someone pointed out to Matt Walsh on Twitter, hey, well, here's, I forget which case it was, but it was one of these cases of a white, white couple, white kid being shot by a black assailant that got virtually, maybe one article was written about it. Matt Walsh responded, well, I didn't hear about that. So how am I? Yeah. Why do you think you haven't heard about that, Matt Walsh? Do you think maybe there's, and he used to tweet about anti-white. He used to tweet about against anti-white narratives and agendas back in the day, but he's owned by Ben Shapiro. He's owned by people who don't really value, our people at the end of the day, who don't really see white Americans as their own, as their people, and only see America as a useful tool to promoting their own ethnic interests. At the end of the day, that's just the reality. So Matt Walsh is bought and paid for by people who are not America first, to say the very least.
And that's not just rhetoric, by the way, either. If you look at one of the main editors for the Daily Wire, he said in a tweet a couple of times, and there were a couple of tweets where he said that, quote, European hatred is inherent in the DNA of people. It said Jewish hatred.
Yeah,
is inherent in the DNA of European people. This is what he claimed in a couple of tweets. Now, imagine if that was a white guy saying that about Jewish people. Would he still have his job at the Daily Wire, or about black people, or about
anywhere?
Hispanic people, or anywhere? Right. No, of course not. He would be completely destroyed. He'd probably go on to commit suicide because the media would have destroyed his hope for the future. So, you know, it's just, and the fact that we're even talking about this, I think that we're sort of even, honestly, we're just going to have to, this trial might even last a year, might last like more than a year. So we're going to have to see how this all plays out. But I don't believe that they're going to get Murder One, if anything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so the Daily Wire, I think one of the lessons we've learned here is that white conservatives can't count on mainstream conservatism, particularly the Daily Wire, to have their back. And if you can't count on conservatism, if you can't count on right-wing institutions and individuals to have your back, who is, right? And the answer is obviously America First. It's the dissident right. We're the only people that are going to actually have the moral courage and fortitude to stick our necks out, to go against the mob, to go against these powerful institutions and individuals that are trying to promote this very destructive and unjust agenda. We're the ones that are doing that. Very few other people are. And the only conservatives that I really see that have decent takes on this, they mostly seem to be black. Now, I don't know what their angle is. In the case of John Miller, I know he's solid.
Yeah, John Miller is hilarious.
John Miller is solid. Candace Owens, I've been a little skeptical.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's so going forth, on there.
It's hard to tell if this is a calculated thing, right? She's doing it for her brand, she's staking out a position that she understands. Many people identify with. By the way, the average white guy in flyover country is not going to side with Matt Walsh on this. No, he sees this and he sees it for what it is. He sees himself as one of the McMichaels. He sees himself as a white Christian property owner, gun owner, confronting a criminal, getting charged by a criminal, not wanting to let the criminal take his gun and then decide, okay, you're going to let me live or you're going to let me die. And he says, okay, I'm like that. And then, what do these people think when they look at Matt Walsh, someone like Matt Walsh, talking about how these guys need to be lethally injected? It's nuts. But it's, oh, by the way, Mark Dice, he had some good takes too, but he's always been...
Yeah, he's always
there. He's an interesting character. He just puts out content. You don't see him like too involved in conservatism proper. You see him, he's like really active on the internet. I don't know if he goes to CPAC or anything of that sort.
I've never seen him.
But he's consistently good. Like he's just, I mean, I'm sure there are takes I would disagree with here and there, but you can count on Mark Dice to have pretty good takes.
Yeah, yeah. His stuff about Brian Stelter is pretty hilarious. But I compare and contrast this to this viral video. I actually posted this on my Telegram channel and my Instagram page. But there was a viral video from a few years ago of this black man who noticed a white man opening the door to his car and like making the movement that would suggest that he was going to get into his car. Well, he pulled out a gun and he held him under citizen arrest until the police got there. Now, if that white guy were to have not laid on the floor until the police got there under citizen's arrest and actually charged this black guy and this black guy shot him, would we be talking about it like we're talking about this today? Of course not. Of course not. Right. And so it's almost the same thing. There's someone trespassing inside of his property, inside of something that he owns. He puts him under citizen arrest. The part that's missing is charging him and trying to take his gun away from him. So it's a very interesting case. But I do want to talk about Conservative Inc. because and this is something that I mentioned in the first segment that I actually did about this Arbery shooting, is that we need them to be the opposing force to the left-wing and mainstream narrative. We need them, and they're not on our side. We need their reach, and they're not on our side. They're consistently trying to show how not racist but they are by siding with people who literally want to kill us all, who want to see our children dead, who want to see our parents dead, who want to see our grandparents dead, who want to see us commit suicide. These are the people who they're siding with. It's just like with the Delaware story. I don't know if you saw anything about this, but we covered this. We were the ones who broke the story. There was a shooting in Delaware. A black man picked up a scoped rifle, went to a wooded area, sat in a ditch, and sniped a white couple. And his social media suggests that it was in payback for this Arbery situation. So he literally hunted down a white couple and killed them and assassinated them. All of the different labels and rhetoric that they're using for this Arbery case, this is what he did to them. This is not being covered.
Yeah, it's a pretty clear-cut case, it seems. Right. There's no ambiguity here.
Right. This is something that we need Conservative Inc. to help push out there, but they're so reluctant to because they don't want to be called racist. they're so reluctant to combat the mainstream narrative around the Covington Catholic kids because they don't want to be considered racist. If you recall, Ben Shapiro was one of the first ones to jump on and pile on top of the Covington Catholic kids. We have the tweets. He denies it, but we have the tweets. Can't get rid of the archives, bud. So I think Matt Walsh did as well. Matt Walsh said that he would vote for the first person who promises to deport all Trump supporters back in 2016. These people, you know, with conservatives like these, who needs liberals? But we actually do need them because they have the reach. They have the power to push this out and fight. Then, I mean, we just don't have it by ourselves. So, but they're consistently on the enemy side, and it's just infuriating.
Right. So yesterday, Vincent, I did a show talking about the just how it, we're obviously, as nationalists will say, as people in the dissident right, aware of this leftward shift that's been happening, I would argue, for centuries. And we've seen it in recent years as well, you know, more recently. 6 and 8 years ago, we had Mike Brown and then Trayvon Martin. And from what I remember back then, I wasn't quite as politically aware, at least not paying attention to mainstream conservative pundits. I was more on 4chan, frankly. I was on poll back then. But it did seem like that you had more conservatives who were willing to side with Darren Wilson and Mike Brown. Or pardon me, not Mike Brown, Darren Wilson and George Zimmerman. And what I'm wondering now is, are the peculiarities and the unique aspects of the Arbery shooting, so is it as a result of those that conservatism make is being bad on the case on this particular instance? Because I mean, it has all of the things that conservatives are typically okay on, at the very least: property rights, law and order, you know, minority crime maybe, and gun rights. But you know, where is conservatism Inc. here? They are siding with Black Lives Matter, the liberal media, and literally the Black Panthers, right? That's the side on this issue that they've taken. So yeah, my question to you is, do you think that it is as a result of the uniqueness of this case that conservatives, particularly conservative pundits, have been so bad, you know, on the issue and their response? Or do you think that things have just moved so far to the left that conservatives, we can just assume that conservative pundits in general don't have the moral fortitude to meaningfully confront the left on contentious issues? Has the left just gained so much more hegemony in the past, 5 to 10 years, that now we're Trayvon Martin? Were that to happen today, conservatives wouldn't defend it? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out why it is that they're being conservatives are so bad on this issue.
Yeah, I would say it's sort of much like the gay marriage thing, right? I mean, 10 years ago, you know, Barack Obama opposed gay marriage. And now look where we're at today. I mean, we went from, you know, wanting to get married legally to trans kids dancing on poles at adult strip clubs while adults throw money at them. In the case of Desmond is amazing. I mean, that literally happened. And drag story hour, kids being chemically castrated effectively, transition at a young age, talking about how pedophilia now is a sexual orientation in regards to the TED talk that I've posted on my Telegram channel before. You know, this sort of, I would say, is relevant because when you look at the trajectory that we're on that front, and you look at the trajectory that we're on this front, I'd say that that's probably largely true. I would also say that it has a lot to do with money, of course. Same thing with immigration, right? For the longest time, Charlie Kirk was saying that, you know, we have record low unemployment. We have so much space between Chicago and Reno, and this is the reason why we need to bring in so many immigrants. I think that we've done a good job with the narrative on immigration. And of course, coronavirus has helped us a little bit, even though it's been bad for some people. But you know, there are some bright sides there. I would say that we just have to keep pushing. We just have to keep fighting. Eventually, I think that we will win this. But honestly, with people like Matt Walsh and Dan Crenshaw and Ben Shapiro up there, I don't think that these people are even salvageable. You know, Ben Shapiro went on Red Ice TV in 2015. Did you know that?
Yeah, he went. Well, not to hit you with an actually. Yeah, he went on Radio 314, which is kind of the sister podcast to Red Ice, and he did an interview with Lana.
Lana.
Yeah, wasn't that long ago? Yeah, Scott's told me that Ben Shapiro was actually better in the past, and I think that was before. You know, it's weird. The Trump phenomenon has made some, in a sense, it's opened up a lot of space to discuss previously controversial issues. But at the same time, it's also turned some people in more conservative, you know, more establishmentarian conservative politics, it's actually made them worse on the positions that they take. Ben Shapiro's an example. David French, a lot of these guys actually wrote decent, you know, semi-decent stuff, I'll say, in the past. But as a result of the 2016 election, right, the establishment conservatism felt threatened. And so many people felt that they need to be not Trump. And for many conservatives that, I'm talking about conservative pundits here, that meant that they had to adopt less right-wing, less reactionary, less conservative issues on positions on a number of issues. But yeah, Ben Shapiro was okay back in the day. He wasn't, he was never great. He was never our guy, but it he's definitely gotten worse at the very least since 2016. I don't know when the Wilkes brothers started funding him. Do you know what?
Yeah,
you know,
certainly after. It was like right around then. Yeah, it was definitely after that for sure. I'd have to look at it up, but I've looked this up before. It was definitely after he appeared with the Lana. You know, he's also talked about demographics changing the electoral outcome and how we were promised, and I think that this was one of his quotes, that we were promised that we were getting conservative Christians, and here's what we got actually, and he listed a bunch of statistics from Pew Research. This is a video that he made before, once again, prior to the Wilkes brothers, prior to, you know, the Daily Wire as we know it today. So, yeah, certainly, I think that to answer your previous question, I think money has a lot to do with their takes on a lot of these things, especially the most controversial issues.
Yeah, it's a point that I do my best to raise on a regular basis. The fact that when you're looking at these conservative pundits and many liberal pundits as well, pundits and public figures, obviously politicians all across the spectrum, the process by which they develop the opinions that they then voice on the public square and the internet, you know, in speeches, wherever, that process is far different than what the average person goes through when they develop their political views. So when you're looking at Ben Shapiro's positions, when you're looking at Matt Walsh's position, David French, it's far more calculated, right? And a lot of it is rooted in self-interest, right? They care about they care about making money. They care about keeping their jobs. They care about their brand and so on and so forth. So in the past, you did have some of these people saying relatively base things when it was okay. Maybe they were just saying that in the past because it was a self-interest calculation. But yeah, so many of them are just owned by odious billionaires and other donors, foreign lobbies, and so forth. And as a result of that, you know, they just have bad takes. They're not really thinking. If you're trying to make the country a better place, right, you need to do an honest and sincere inventory, really, of what's been happening in Western civilization. These people don't do that. And if they've done it, they've done it privately. And that has no bearing on the positions that they publicly advocate for. That's why the dissident right is so important, because we aren't owned by anyone. If anything, we're owned by the super chatters. But guess what? You guys care about this stuff sincerely. You guys aren't, you know, some of you get more than others, obviously. But you guys aren't billionaires, right? You guys don't have some huge vested financial interest in promoting this policy or that policy. You guys care about your future. You care about your kids' future. You care about our civilization and restoring order, right? That's what this is all about at the end of the day. And as a result of that, I would say that, you know, that keeps us honest. That keeps people like me and Vince honest, because not that we would, you know, veer off the minute you stop giving us super chats, but the fact that we don't have to rely on big donors, and I've said this many times in the past, but, you know, there are based people worth hundreds of millions of dollars there. There are based billionaires out there. I'm not saying I would turn down their money, but you'd have to understand, even, you know, however based they are, it's going to come with strings attached. They're going to want you to promote certain narratives. But now we tell the truth, right? We tell a very, you know, optical version of the truth. It's not just going out there and saying whatever's on your mind, whatever, you know, obscure fact you've dug up. You have to be strategic in how you put it out. But it's about the end. The end for us is the good, or at least our conception of the good, right? Trying to restore a more healthy, harmonious social order in this country and more broadly in Western civilization. The end for people in establishment conservatism is oftentimes promoting the donor class, promoting themselves, and probably just rationalizing, right? Like on a post-hoc rationalization to convince themselves and maybe convince others that they actually believe in this stuff, right? Because I think at the end of the day, most people aren't going to be able to sleep well at night knowing that they've sold out, that they're just promoting social values and mores that they don't really believe in. So I think these people do have to do a rationalization for that. And they might tell themselves that they actually believe in it. This is actually for the good, but it isn't, right? At the end of the day, if these people are advocating for good policies, it's by accident. It's incidental. That's not really the motivating factor there.
Yeah, I mean, they're surrendering at every point in like the most important battles. They just surrender every single time. And we can't go on like this. If we actually want to conserve, if we actually want to have freedom in this country, if we actually want to achieve the things that even Conservative Inc., who, you know, most of them are just classic liberals or libertarians, even that they want to achieve, we can't go on like this. We have to come together. We have to be on the same side here. Everyone is needed. In order to get something reached, in order to change, to combat the media narrative, we need everyone. And they're just not doing that. So I don't know what to say, honestly. You know, I was thinking about something, like some of these people, they haven't been really in the spotlight, like Matt Walsh. He sort of come around lately, but like Ben Shapiro and some of these other people, you know, they've attended lots of different rallies and speaking events at universities. What are they called by these kids, right? They're called racists. They're called neo-Nazis. They're called
Ben Shapiro, the national socialist, the neo-Nazi. Yeah.
Right. All these different names. And so I would say that that might play a part, as well as the money, into them always feeling that they need to convince the left that they're not racist. But that's like 2015 thinking. You know, it's like they're stuck back then. And they need to shake out of this if they actually want to win. Maybe they don't even care about winning anymore. Maybe they're just so comfortable in life that they're like the rest of the elites on the other side, that, you know, they're going to be able to hide away in their gated community, in their mansions, for the rest of their life. And that they have generational wealth built up now to where, do they even authentically even care anymore? And I would venture to guess probably not.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the Charlie Kirk position. He's making high six figures, maybe even seven figures running TPUSA. So when it comes to what the average person is going to have to deal with, I mean, obviously what the average person has to deal with now, he has no connection to that, right? He just, you know, again, he's promoting himself. He's making money off of this. Whether or not these policies actually benefit America, it's of secondary concern. But you're absolutely right in drawing attention to the fact that these establishment conservatives, they're things that move to the left. There's a lot of social and institutional pressure on right-wing expression in this country. As I said before, these people don't have the moral fortitude to meaningfully confront the left on all of these issues. Because to do that, that's when you go against the mob. That's when you go against the powers that be, and the eye of Sauron is trained upon you. And we know how it is, right? We know what it's like to have these hit pieces written about you, to have, you know, people post your address on the internet, to get deplatformed, lose your job. We've all been through that. We've, you know, not everyone watching this, obviously, but people like me, Vince, Nick, Jake, others. In order for us to save our civilization from globalism, from progressivism, and the people responsible for the promulgation of those ideologies, it's going to take people putting, sticking their necks out, right? We're not, the idea that we're going to be able to win this by calling like liberals racist and, oh, checkmate, I've used ideological jujitsu on you. That's not how it's going to have to be. People are going to have to make risks. They're going to have to take sacrifices, and they're going to have to stick their necks out there to take the truth, to tell the truth rather. Everyone isn't going to have to do that. I'm not saying the audience should do that. You guys should be trying to get more involved in conventional politics, support streamers that you like, maybe come out to events. I'm not saying everyone has to do that. But the idea that we're going to be able to get from point A to point B, playing these games that conservatives play, you know, Democrats are the real racists. You had someone on Twitter the other day saying, oh, Mitt Romney's a homophobe. He fired Rick Grenell. Yeah, it's where do these people think this is going? Where do you think we're just upholding this left paradigm, this leftist morality that, hey, remember, has been responsible for destroying our civilization? What, do you think that you're going to win? You're going to be able to carve out some space within that and reclaim our civilization? No, you're just going to help. You're just going to be complicit in the onslaught of what liberals consider progress. And that's the constant erosion of order, of virtue, of tradition, just moving toward whatever ghoulish future awaits us if nothing changes. So yeah, we have to meaningfully and authentically confront the left, confront the globalists, and most importantly, I would actually add, confront the fake right, right? Confront conservatism, because at the end of the day, conservatism, Inc. is controlled opposition, right? Controlled opposition, it's very dangerous, because you look at a lot of what they say, and maybe it's right. A lot of these people say they're America first. Maybe some of them, like Charlie Kirk, favor tariffs with China, which is something I agree with. Maybe some of them will, on occasion, like Charlie Kirk has been doing recently, voice decent takes on immigration. But it's important to keep in mind, this is the way that controlled opposition works, right? Controlled opposition works by saying maybe 80, 75, 60 some percentage of good things, and then having a lot of trash thrown in there. And the issue is, the good stuff attracts well-intentioned people who are maybe a bit clueless, maybe a bit naive. They don't really understand. They're not cynical enough to really understand how flawed the entire system is. And those that the channels authentic energy that we need to channel into real America first active, policies and metapolitics and so forth, channels that into what is effectively a dead end. The establishment is more than willing to grant some concessions here and there. They do that on the right and on the left. Right, they'll let Matt Walsh talk about how gay marriage is bad. They'll let Matt Walsh do that. Sure, that doesn't mean Matt Walsh is based. That means that Matt Walsh exists, whether or not he knows it, whether or not Ben Shapiro is consciously promoting him for this reason. I think there's probably a bit of that. Matt Walsh, someone like Matt Walsh exists to get white Christians to say, okay, this guy's good. I'll go along with that. Oh, and he also is saying we should support Israel. Oh, he's also saying, race doesn't matter, right? Because you get people, you appeal to something that they care about, and then you take that, and then you just, next thing you know, all of that energy has been basically thrown, poured down the drain. And that's why we have to be so, absolutely so cautious of controlled opposition. So we got a few Ninja Genies here I am going to read off. I'll remind you guys, we do have Entropy available. So we have one for Vincent James. It looks like Vincent James brought me
another Vincent James.
Is that
just joking?
Wow. Well, thank you for donating while you're coming on my show, man. I really appreciate it. What a stand-up guy. Online Nobody says we will win. Then he says, no strings. Appreciate y'all's integrity and objectivity. Hopefully more people can return to reality. Absolutely. Thank you. I'm going to salute you for those two Ninja Genies, man. Thank you so much. And I'll give a salute to Vince James as well. Thanks, Vince. I appreciate you coming on, being such a stand-up guy, donating too.
Yeah, I usually drop a Ninja Genie every time I see someone live.
What a king. What a king. Thank you, man. Seriously. So let's maybe think about wrapping up in about 10 minutes here. The stream will go on for longer, guys. Don't go anywhere. But so for the purposes of this, which will be available as a podcast episode, we're going to start wrapping up in about 10.
I'm glad this isn't camera because I have paint all over me right now. So,
yeah, I actually have a second monitor now, so I can start doing the two video interviews. Cool. It was surprisingly complex. I didn't realize that when I started streaming, a few months back. But anyways, Vince, so what do you predict going forward with the McMichael situation? Do you think conservative pundits are going to get any better on the case? I know Matt Walsh has kind of walked some of his previous statements back while he's still holding true to that this guy did nothing wrong, nothing that's worth being killed over. Do you think that the McMichaels are going to be found guilty? I just want to get your predictions for where this is going.
Yeah, the only thing, and don't get me wrong, people have said, well, hey, Vince, do you think that he deserved to die for this? No, of course, I don't think that he deserved to die for walking into a house under construction. Of course not. But the problem is that they're missing is that this guy charged someone and tried to take his gun away, there was no evidence of him pointing the gun at him prior to that. Also, no evidence of racial motivation, which is how this all started out. So I don't know. This all hinges, like I said, on the legality of the pursuit. It all hinges on the legality of the pursuit. This is what it all comes down to, because the Georgia law does say that it's only if you witness a felony can you pursue and commence a citizen's arrest. But there's a Georgia district attorney, a Brunswick district attorney, who explained that they also could be right in pursuing him if they saw what they perceived to be a felony, even though it was a misdemeanor. So there's, I'm not a lawyer. I'm just going off of what these people say. And I've been posting these clips lately that I've found from local affiliates. I think it's CBS or NBC affiliates that have been covering this sort of day by day. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think that a fair trial, I don't think that they'll get murder one, maybe manslaughter, maybe even nothing. Maybe they'll walk, but, that's a fair trial. Now, we're going to have to see how this all plays out. Now, given that usually things like this take quite some time and the media pressure dies down along the line, maybe we'll see something different happen. Even the person who recorded the shooting has his death threats against him as well, which goes to show you that the video of the shooting isn't at all what the media thinks that it is. Number one. Number two, it was the person who was supposed to be representing the McMichaels, Alan Tucker was his name. He was a lawyer. He was supposed to be representing the McMichaels, who released the video first, and then it went viral because, Sean King and his crew got a hold of it. But so that's a very interesting point that I think a lot of people are missing. It appears to be the case that the lawyer thought that the charging and the attack, the aggravated assault, exonerated the McMichaels. So that's my opinion on this. I honestly don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think that, like I said, it depends on how long this takes.
Sure. So let's briefly talk about the previous legal situation, right? So this happened months ago, and I believe two district attorneys claimed that or reached the conclusion that McMichaels actually didn't deserve to receive, be on the receiving end of any criminal charges. Is that correct? Do you know about that?
Yeah, there's a whole report done on it. I think we talked about this on the Malkin stream that I did the other day. Yeah, there was a whole report done on it. There was, you know, various different people who said that the arrest wasn't necessary, but the lawyer actually said that he released the video because a riot, because he was trying to prevent a riot from happening in their community, because this was like big news in the local community down there in Georgia. Right. I actually heard about this before any video came out. So the lawyer said that he released the video to prevent a riot, meaning he said explicitly, I didn't do it to show that, you know, the men are exonerated. I did it to prevent a riot. Then he eventually ended up refusing to represent McMichaels. And so that's how that played out. But, you know, and the person who released the video is getting death threats as well. I mean, they can't even go back home, they said, according to this NBC affiliate that I've been following. So,
so it was a defense attorney for the McMichaels before, obviously, before this all happened, when they were initially involved in the legal, you know, the immediate aftermath of the shooting.
It was George Barnhill, the district attorney.
It was the DA who released this, district attorney
in the Waycross Judicial Court.
Yeah, well, that was great decision to release it. I'm sure that, here you go, you prevented the riot, and now you've caused this national scandal.
Right,
that,
did the opposite.
I mean, it's such a joke, right? You already had the DAs look at the case, say, okay, they're not recommending any charges. But then the video goes out, and the mob gets riled up, and then you have a virtual, not as of yet, there hasn't been any physical riots. You have a virtual riot. Now these guys, now the mob is mad. Now we have to get these guys, you know, we have to actually charge them with something. It's just total mob rule. But it's a kind of mob rule. It's what it is a high-low. This is something that's been discussed, you know, in the past in the dissident right. A high-low is where you have a ruling class that is opposed to the middle class, generally, it's just opposed to white America, historic America, as we like to call it. And they're using the low, which is people of low socioeconomic background, minorities, racial minorities, sexual minorities, religious minorities, kind of forming this coalition of the ascendant, right? And the high and the low are crunching the middle. They're crunching middle America. That's what's been happening, right? That's what's been happening. It's been happening economically, morally, demographically, and legally, right? And that's just really what we're seeing play out here at this point. Conservatives love talking about mob rule. No, this is... Yes, the mob is definitely a factor in these situations and in contemporary politics. But it's worth pointing out, the mob is riled up by the media, by the powers that be, to promote the ruling ideology, to promote the interests of our ruling class. So it's not as if, it's just the plebeians are rising up or something of that sort. Well, there's some of that. But what it really is they're doing this because our ruling class wants them to be mad. They are making them mad. They are manufacturing outrage. And it all serves a purpose, right? It's not that a ruling class has control over everything. It isn't. You get some people get really carried away with more conspiratorial. Oh, the ruling, everything that happens in the news is like this psyop or something. Not the case. There's some stuff like that, sure. But
there's definitely that. I've heard that about things.
There are people that think that it's all everything. Every news story you read is fake. It's manufactured. All of this stuff, and it's. It's pretty kooky, but we're not.
Well, not even that, but they go even further than that. There's like, I was covering this story about, I don't know, there might be some truth to this. Who knows? I haven't even looked into it, but I was covering this story about this cop who basically posted a video on social media and said that, you know, he was against the enforcement of the, you know, the coronavirus shutdown enforcement and what's happening. I guess he got put on leave and his bosses are apparently going to fire him. Anyway, don't feel sorry for him. He raised like $300,000 on GoFundMe. But, basically, I got a bunch of these comments and some emails from some people saying that this guy's a Freemason. His wife's 33 years old and he's something with to do with 33 or I don't know if they were like trolling or not, but they seemed pretty serious about these things. So I don't know. There might be some truth to it. Who knows? But I know exactly what you're talking about, where people just take it a little bit way too far with some of these theories here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the future of the McMichaels is uncertain, and I fear for our country now more than ever. Just this goes to show that the number of voices out there in the public square willing to take a meaningful stand against tyranny, against globalist oppression, and against leftism continues to shrink. But fortunately, our thing is growing. America First is growing. And in a sense, Conservatism Inc. is seeding ground, right? Because again, the average white Trump supporter, even just the average Trump supporter probably of any race at this point, they're going to side with the McMichaels, right? I'm guessing they side with the McMichaels. I haven't seen data on that, but I can tell you from living in West Virginia, living in rural Virginia, you know, the average good old boy, the average white working class, that's not the kind of person that's going to look at agree with Matt Walsh on this take. Now, he's going to look at that and say, well, shouldn't have charged him. Right. It's just that simple. You don't have to be 1,000 IQ. You don't need to have a PhD to realize the reality of the situation. As you've pointed out, Vince, it's that particular detail that is the most important, I would argue. Obviously, the rest of the context matters too. What was he there doing? You know, why did they chase him? What were their intentions? But you just don't charge someone with a gun. You don't try to steal someone's gun, because at that point, the person has the option basically of shooting you or trying to wrestle the gun back from you, or letting you take the gun. And then at that point, this person who's attacked on the street, who you don't know, has your life in their hands. And that's not, in a free society, that's not the kind of thing that you just let someone else decide, right? You don't let someone take your gun and decide if they're going to shoot you with it. It's insane. It's insane. We wouldn't be having this conversation 100 years ago, 50 years ago, maybe not even 20 years ago, but things have moved so far to the left. And I want to point out, a big part of globalism entails, you know, middle America, right? The middle that's being crunched by the high and the low, not being able to defend itself. That's part of demoralization. It's part of delegitimization. That's part of just basically being told you don't have a right to anything. You don't own anything, right? You're lucky to even be alive. You're lucky we even let you, you know, breathe. That's kind of the message that we're getting, that you know, white conservatives and conservatives in general, sure, are getting.
Pay your interest or lose everything, right?
Yeah. You just exist to pay taxes, right? To pay for these new people to come in who demographically replace you. Pay taxes so that these institutions of higher education can train your kids to hate your civilization, to hate your religion, to hate basically all that is good in the world, right? So it's clearly a corrupt and disgusting and unjust state of affairs. But that's the reason we do what we do, right? We're getting the message out there. We're raising awareness. We're building this America First coalition that is actually affecting real change, right? The Great War was perfect. Now, I think that was really just the beginning of the potential. They really showed the potential that the America First had. It wasn't that, and then it's over. Some of the Daily Wire people were trying to accuse Nick, oh, you were relevant for 5 minutes. No, this is just getting started, buddy. We're just getting started here. We're not going anywhere. We are going to win. We absolutely
are. Hey, what? Every time I tune into his stream to drop a Ninjagini, I see like 7,000 live viewers. he's got thousands of people watching him every single night, and it's like
very, yeah, I've never seen those numbers.
Certainly not irrelevant.
In political streams. No, I haven't. I haven't. Ben Shapiro did a live stream. I don't know. I don't know if he'd be able to beat those numbers, but at the very least, comparing everything that he has behind him, you know, we're punting far above our weight class. So.
To be fair, total number of viewers, like whenever the video is posted, I mean, you see some of these videos, they get, it's like 300,000, 500,000. So yeah, I mean, yeah,
we're funded by billions. They've been doing this for far longer. They are far bigger names. But at the end of the day, too, it's which people are tuning into this. We're getting the people who are inquisitive, who are intelligent, who are capable of doing a holistic rethinking of everything they've been taught by society. And look, I'm not going to name names. There are far, you know, some of the biggest names you can think of in right-wing politics, the good ones at the very least. They know we're right. They know we're right. So it's up to us to build metapolitical space that advocates for dissident but important and valid ideas in a manner that is optical, defensible, and intellectually valid. And we need to draw people into our orbit. We've already done that with a number of people. And that what that means is you get bigger names that start saying the stuff that we've been saying for so long. It's not that we're warping these people's minds or something of that sort, but you're just creating space so these people can say what they want to say. And that's what the alt-right should have been. But the alt-right failed at that through just all sorts of indefensible LARPing, trying to revive anachronistic political movements. Don't need to go into all of that. We've discussed failures of the alt-right ad infinitum, but what we're doing now with America First is so important, and it's thanks to you guys. Honestly, it's without the super chatters, this wouldn't be happening, so thank you guys so much for that. But anyways, Vince, I think we're going to let you go here. Keep up the good work, and I guess the best place, just if you had to give out one place where people could find you.
Go to DLive, DLive.tv/Vincent James, and tune into my streams.
Do you normally stream at certain times, or perhaps maybe someone following you on Telegram would be a better way to keep up with your stuff?
Telegram's really good, by the way. Telegram's really good. Really fun, too, by the way.
I've been saying this, you're not in the movement if you're not on Telegram. Sorry, guys. Right.
Telegram's awesome. Yeah, you download Telegram. Use a Google Voice number if you have to, if you're worried about, you know, whatever. But I would say the D live streams, I up until I started doing, you know, these little things that I need to get done around the house here, I was streaming pretty much consistently every single weekday towards the early afternoon. So I'm probably going to be back to that, but I've been streaming at nighttime here and there sporadically. So make sure to follow dlive.tv/Vincent James and Telegram, which I don't even know what it is, but
I'm sure if you Google Vincent James Telegram, you can find that. But guys, I'm serious when I say that if you're not on Telegram, I mean, Vince, I don't know if Vince has a Twitter account. I've seen some fan accounts out there. Who knows who's running these accounts? But when it comes to Telegram, that's like, it's like the home base. It's a home base for me. I'm not on Twitter anymore. Malkin posts there, Nick, Jaden, you know, Vince James, Steve Franson. Am I forgetting anyone? I think we're mostly there. Did I say Jake Lloyd? I think I said Jake Lloyd. So you got to get the whole crew there. So anyways, yeah, guys, keep up with Vincent James. He's putting out great content. Even he said he's you know, been doing stuff around the house. He's not putting out as much content recently, but it's still a ton. He's got amazing work ethic, family man, good guy. I've had the opportunity to hang out with him a few times. He's the real deal. So thank you, Vincent. Take care. And until next time.
You got it, man. Take it easy.